President Trump's decision to pull the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal is raising a lot of questions about what comes next. Well, what could history tell us about that? After all, this is not the first time the U.S. has backed out of an agreement. For a look back, we're joined by Ed Ayers and Brian Ballow, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks very much.
Good to be here.
And Ed, as we always do, take us back to the early days, because the U.S. would not even be here if the colonists didn't pull us out of a certain deal with the British.
Yeah, it seemed like a good deal to the Brits. Now, what's the point? You know, we'll let you do basically everything you want to do. We do ask at some point that you pay some taxes to help sustain the empire that benefits you in every way. And while here in Great Britain we're paying 26 shillings per person, you're paying one. And it seems as if maybe asking you for some more would seem a reasonable request, but it turned out not to be from the American point of view.
Right. And they did a lot of stuff, Ed, right? They provided security. They provided trade to all of their other outposts around the world. It really was a pretty good deal.
Well, the Americans said, yeah, but we have higher authority, inalienable rights, not to follow this agreement, so we're gone.
Well, and we like to think about it as a done deal when the Revolutionary War ended, but were there calls to rejoin Britain, do another deal?
Well, not so much. The calls there were, is Britain really going to come back and redo the deal by defeating us militarily, which it seemed they had the power to do virtually at any time. That War of 1812 put an end to that one.
And then, yeah, but that said, I mean, a lot of people did get up and go to places like Nova Scotia. They said, we are going to continue
these
nice trade deals. And besides, we're kind of tired of being tarred and feathered.
Well, what about the deals with the Native Americans, one of the darker moments in American history?
Yeah, it's one of the great continuities in deal-making across American history is that the United States government has always broken its 500 treaties with indigenous people of the United States. And as recently as early 20th century, Supreme Court ruled that, yeah, we can do that, that the United States can basically renege on any deal made with Native Americans. And so, you know, there too, it was an appeal to a higher law. Yeah, I know we signed this treaty, but you don't understand progress and Christianity require that we displace you. And so, sorry. But there's something bigger than you and me here at play.
Well, one of the consequences of that was just more and more distrust by Native Americans of European Americans.
Yeah, and for good reason. And I think that if there had been actual parity about establishing these treaties, they wouldn't have been. But the United States always had the upper hand because it had all the power and growing numbers of people to overwhelm them.
Brian, take us closer to the present and the League of Nations, the multinational coalition which grew out of World War I as a way to promote world peace. President Woodrow Wilson won a Nobel Prize for his help in establishing it, but then the U.S. never joined. What happened?
Well, you know, Ed emphasized how we always have a moral reason for what we do, and World War I, America's entry into it, was definitely sold to the American people in terms of being the moral thing to do, and Wilson was determined that if we were going to enter this war, that nations should have the right to self-determination. They shouldn't be oppressed by other nations. And so when the war ended, Wilson was determined to have collective security agreements so that strong nations could protect weaker nations. Unfortunately, he lost political support for that. And Wilson was a Democrat. Republicans, primarily, in the Senate said, no, we're not handing over our sovereignty to other nations. That's how they interpreted one important clause in this agreement. And the League of Nations was created, but it was created without the United States. It was the first treaty that the United States ever voted down in the Senate.
And what did the U.S. absence do to the credibility of the League of Nations?
It basically sapped the effectiveness of the League of Nations. Everybody recognized that it was a bit of a hollow institution. You know, the United States would return to collective security after World War II and was instrumental in creating the United Nations. But Franklin Roosevelt went out of his way to secure bipartisan support for the United Nations, really even before World War II was over.
Now, throughout the 20th century, there were other deals that were broken, many for political reasons. What are some examples of that?
Well, we've been talking about formal treaties and even wars to leave Great Britain. One of the informal ways in which America has participated traditionally around the world is through the International Olympics. Yet in 1980, with the Summer Olympics coming up, the United States said they were going to boycott those Olympics. Now, this wasn't abrogating a treaty, but it was violating a longstanding precedent. The United States did that because the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, and this was one of President Jimmy Carter's responses. You know, most Americans really supported the boycott of the Olympics, pulling out of something that the United States had very traditionally participated in that literally symbolized the world getting along with each other.
In 1972, there was the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which President George W. Bush later pulled out of. How did that resonate throughout the world?
Well, W. Bush pulled out at the very end of 2001, and that's another kind of reason for pulling out of treaties. That was a treaty that was set up at the height of something called mutually assured destruction. What made us safe?
The good old days, yeah.
The good old days, Ed. What made us safe was that we knew that we could blow up the Soviet Union, they could blow us up. And so the key was stability, not changing the balance between each nation's ability to incinerate the other. And anti-ballistic missiles, defense against missiles, might upset that balance. So this deal was made in 1972. W. Bush pulled out of it because he, I think, correctly said in 2001, the threat is from terrorists. The threat is from rogue states, and we need to build a shield that will protect us from one or two rockets, not thousands of Soviet rockets, especially since the Soviet Union no longer existed. It's a good example of pulling out of a treaty because times have really changed and the basic purpose of that treaty had changed quite a bit.
Ed, when you hear about all of this, it does seem like President Trump's move on Iran is not totally unprecedented, but what do you think all these other examples tell us about what the U.S. might expect?
Well, I think it tells us that all these decisions have consequences. You know, one of the ones that I think about, sort of what's seen as a reneged promise, is 40 acres and a mule. You know, the idea that the enslaved people who built so much of the United States would have a chance to build farms of their own and are told such by generals on the ground in their faces, and then they're removed, it still echoes throughout, you know, the political economy of the country today. I think, as Brian was saying, too, about these earlier attempts throughout the 20th century of the United States, our goal has always been stability. It seems as if President Trump's initiative is not really about stability, but it's about making our own mark, his own mark, on the world, even in the face of resistance from our allies. So this does feel like more of a pivot maybe than a continuity.
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that pivot is because Americans are less sure that they are benefiting from stability. I think for the period, certainly from World War II well into the 21st century, Americans rightly, I think, believe that they had a major say in the international system and were benefiting from it. I think the recent election really underscores that a lot of Americans are questioning whether that international system, which America has surely helped design, is still benefiting the United States. And I think that that means the premium on stability, the premium on honoring past obligations is maybe not so much anymore.
That's Brian Ballow and Ed Ayers, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.